guys. Here we are again with yet another installment in my Halloween Eek Week series. All my, you know, extra movie reviews that I'm doing for the week of Halloween. Movies that I've really wanted to get around to doing for a very long time and for whatever reason just never got around to them. So these are ones that are kind of like long overdue, I guess. This one probably more than any other ones. This is one of the ones, even way back when we were first starting to do movie reviews, this was actually one of the first ones that I think that I wrote down on the list. And for whatever reason, we just never really got around to doing it. But I'm finally remedying that situation now. This is Guillermo del Toro's 2001, The Devil's Backbone. Now, I'm not actually sure, now that I'm thinking about this, this might actually be the first Guillermo del Toro movie that I've seen. Or that I saw. I don't remember. I don't think I saw it in the theater because I don't think I was living in Daytona or Tampa at that time, and I'm really not sure if it played in the theaters there. So I think maybe I saw it like a year later, rented it or something, because I kind of heard a lot of buzz about it. I'd heard his name, but, you know, as someone to watch, but I hadn't really seen any of his kind of more big budget stuff. So what ended up happening with this movie was that I don't know if most people know, because I feel like a lot of people don't talk about his really early movies, but back in 1993, he made a Spanish language film, which this is too, called Cronos, which was sort of like a vampire movie, kind of, but had a really unique spin on it. I actually will probably do a review of that eventually one day too, because I think I have it on DVD back there. I just found it. It was up in my attic the other day when we moved. But yeah, I'd totally forgotten that I had it. But yeah, so it's there. So he had worked on that, and there was like a lot of buzz about it. So like I said, he ended up kind of getting a lot of sort of bigger budget projects. So one of those was Mimic, which I think ended up coming out in 1997. And I guess I kind of remember seeing that back in the day, but I don't really remember a lot about it. But I remember like the production of that was kind of a clusterfuck, and he didn't really have a good time on it. And there was like all this other kind of shit about it. And so right around the time that that was going on and he was having a huge headache with, you know, trauma with making that movie, something else actually happened in his personal life. His dad was actually kidnapped in Guadalajara and was held for ransom for like 72 days or something like that. So these two things happening in his life at around the same time, you know, the clusterfuck that was Mimic and his dad being kidnapped, sort of made him kind of like want to get back to doing something creatively that was more like what he wanted, like doing something more independent. So what he did was he went back to this script that he had written like 16 years prior, when he was still in college, I believe. And that script was what would end up being The Devil's Backbone. So he actually wrote The Devil's Backbone, the story, even before Cronos came out. So this was like back in the early 90s or whenever. Now, I think the original script was very different than how it actually turned out. But, you know, so there were some variations along the way. I don't think it was initially supposed to be set during the Spanish Civil War, or that it was just kind of like a kind of a sad ghost story. It has like some other more fantastical elements, but honestly, like the way it turned out, I really, really love movies like this. Like I said, this gets compared a lot to The Others, which also came out in 2001. And, you know, obviously The Orphanage, which came out later, which he actually produced as well. So it's that still kind of vibe. Also, Pan's Labyrinth, which came out in 2006, he considers like the sister movie to this film. This one is more low-key ghost story, whereas Pan's Labyrinth is more fantasy. But they're set during the same time period, and they both have this sort of tone of chill, like everything being seen through the eyes of children, and kind of like a fantasy element to it. Also, this is kind of like a running through line through like a lot of Del Toro's stuff, is that usually the monsters, whatever they are, whether they're ghosts or what have you, are not usually the bad guys. It's usually like humans. The villains end up being humans, and the monsters or ghosts or what have you generally end up being just misunderstood or like trying not to scare the humans, but you know what I mean. So it kind of ends up like that in The Devil's Backbone. So what happens in this, there's a little boy named Carlos, and this is set in 1939, during the Spanish Civil War. So Carlos, his dad, has been killed in the war, and he was fighting on this on the side of the Republican Army. It's the Republican Army versus the Nationalists. So he's so his dad is killed. So he's taken by these two friends of his dad's, or you know, acquaintances, whatever, to this very remote orphanage. I think it's called Santa Lucia, and it's sort of like out in the middle of nowhere, like in this sort of blasted sand landscape or whatever. So he's taken out there and you know, kind of put up. Now, interestingly, this orphanage, it's all boys. And it has, very prominently, an unexploded bomb in the courtyard. And so they come in, and it's, like, sitting there, and he and they ask about it, and they're like, yeah, it was dropped here a while back, and it just never went off, and then they just came and defused it, you know. And so it's like, too heavy to move, and they didn't bother moving it, so we just leave it there. So it's almost kind of like this very ominous, you know, this kind of omen, this thing that's, like, sitting there. Now, it doesn't take too long before Carlos arrives, like, after Carlos arrives, for him to hear that this orphanage may be haunted. And honestly, he pretty much sees an apparition within the first few minutes of him arriving. And can I just say that, like, the apparition in this, it's not super flashy, it's not, and this came out in 2001, and the special effects in this, I'm not entirely sure how they did it. It's probably CGI of some kind, but it really doesn't look, because I know that there's, like, a lot of movies that came out in 2001, and, like, the special effects look kind of, like, nowadays, but the ones in The Devil's Backbone still look great. The ghost, it's honestly, it's one of the creepiest ghosts ever. It's like a little boy, and he has like these really creepy, his eyes are like kind of like, there's like a pinpoint of light like in the middle of them, and they're kind of like dark and stuff. And he almost kind of looks like a porcelain doll, like it's kind of cracked. And then he has this wound in his head that just like blood comes out of it and like flows up out of it, like almost like it's underwater. So there's always kind of like this swirling sort of like blood cloud kind of thing. And also when he walks, you can kind of see, like, he looks sort of solid, but then when he walks, you can kind of see, like, every now and then you can see, like, bones, like, sort of like the x-ray. But it's, like, really, really subtle, and it's really, really cool the way it's done. So Carlos arrives at this place, and, you know, kind of immediately there's kind of a bully character there that starts picking on him. But who's, you know, he turns out okay later on. But he starts hearing stories about this little boy that was there, because he gets the same bed, like when they put them in the, you know, in all the beds and everything. They said, oh, he got Santi's bed. Now, Santi disappeared the night that the bomb fell into the courtyard, and no one seems entirely sure what happened to him. So for a time, like, the other boys tell Carlos that there is maybe a ghost in the orphanage, and they call him the one who sighs, because I don't know, it seems unclear if, like, the other boys have seen him, but they definitely, like, hear him, like, going through the halls and everything like that, and it's kind of creeping him out. And I don't know if they make the association at first between him and Santi, because they don't know, you know, they just know that Santi disappeared and nobody knew what happened to him. However, like I said, Carlos did get a glimpse of what looked like a creepy boy. He almost kind of looked like a real boy for a second, because he kind of sees him far away, and it's, like, in the day, and he sees him in, like, a doorway, so it's possible it could be a real kid, but then it's like he turns back and he's not there. So not too long after he arrives, he's sent one night by kind of the bully kids, and they're like, hey, why don't you go get us some water? You know, and you have to go to this, like, creepy sort of cistern or whatever, like, in the basement or wherever it is, like, in this really creepy area. And so they go there with him, but then they abandon him because they think that's, like, funny. At which point, Carlos hears whispering, like, very ghostly whispering, and basically it says, saying something like, many of you will die, or most of you will die, or something like that, which obviously, like, freaks Carlos out a lot. Now, so Carlos runs away and gets swept, like, kind of scooped up by this dude named Jacinto, who is this, like, he's kind of like, I think he's, like, the groundskeeper. And he was once an orphan there himself. I think one of his, like, his fiance, Conchita, she's a teacher there. And he's also banging the older woman that owns the place, like, with her husband that, like, runs the place. So, and you can tell from the jump that he's, like, really not that nice of a dude. Like I said, this is very much like Pan's Labyrinth, where you know, the humans are kind of like the worst people. So you can tell he's pretty much a dick. So he catches Carlos, but Carlos won't. He's just like, you know, I just came down here to get water. So he doesn't like narc on the other kids that made him go down there. So that kind of like endears him to the other children because he didn't like rat them out, right? Now, something that's going on in the middle of all this too is that Jacinto, because he's been there for such a long time, he knows that somewhere in the orphanage, there's like a little cache of gold bars. Which, as I said, this orphanage is run by kind of like an older couple, and they're very much like on the Republican Army side. So they're kind of like keeping this gold, you know, for the cause or whatever. And that's kind of what they say. But Jacinto, of course, just wants it for his own self because he thinks, you know, he grew up an orphan. He was perhaps treated badly. So he's like, well, I deserve this. So I'm going to try and steal it. So while nobody's looking, he's always kind of like searching the place for the gold. He knows it might be in this kind of safe, so he's always kind of trying to bust it open. So he's always doing that kind of stuff. And while that's going on, Carlos is also, you know, hearing more stories about this ghost. And he actually does finally end up seeing him, like, right up close, you know what I mean? And like I said, the look of it is just great. He's just, like, a creepy, creepy kid. And Carlos, of course, is terrified. But, as I said, just like in a lot of Del Toro's other movies, it does actually turn out that even though this ghost looks terrifying, and says creepy things like many of you will die. He keeps like repeating that kind of stuff. So obviously Carlos is like freaking out about it, but it actually ends up that this kid is really kind of like warning them and is only kind of like misunderstood, is not really trying to scare them. It's just trying to get like some information across. Now, another thing that Carlos finds out too, while he's going through like kind of like a sketchbook of one of the other boys whose name is Jaime, who was kind of like one of the bully kids, but then he was a little bit older, and then like he endeared himself to him later on. But he was kind of going through his stuff, and he finds this little sketch in there of like a boy who's like laying on the ground or whatever with like blood coming out of his head, and it's marked Santi. And he's like, okay, well, maybe Jaime knows what happened to Santi and all the other kids don't know because, you know, he seems to know that Santi is probably dead, right? And then while that's going on too, there's also, like I said, this whole kind of thing about the one of the guys that originally brought Carlos to the orphanage, who was one of the Republican Army like sympathizer guys that had been friends with Carlos's dad. He actually gets taken by the nationalists and they bring a bunch of them to the orphanage and like execute a bunch of them, at which point the couple that are like running the orphanage are like, yeah, well, if that guy said anything about all the gold and shit like that we have in here, we're fucked. So we really need to get all these kids and pack up and get the fuck out of Dodge. So that's pretty much what they start doing. However, Jacinto, the groundskeeper, finds out about this. And he's basically like, well, I'm not leaving without the gold, so you better tell me what it is. You know, where it is. And he gets a little bit rough and violent and everything and starts telling like the older guy that, hey, I'm fucking your wife and shit, all this other kind of crap. At which point they kind of like kick his ass and tell him to get the fuck out. So they kick him out. Now, so they do that, and then, like, they're trying to pack all the kids up and get him out of there, like, before the Nationalist Army comes through or, you know, the Nationalist sympathizers come through. So they're trying to get them all out of there, and then, unbeknownst to them, Jacinto has kind of circled back around and has come back to the place, and while everybody's packing up, like, all the kids and everything, he's, like, searching for the gold, and then he's gonna, like, burn the place down. Whether the kids are in it or not, he doesn't really give a shit. All he wants is the gold. His girlfriend tries to shoot him, but, like, she gets knocked down, and then, like, the fire starts, and he has put up, like, all these cans of gasoline and all this other kind of stuff. So the, you know, the two of the older women that run the place, they try to get all the kids out before the ship blows up. But the ship blows up, and a bunch of the kids end up getting killed, and a bunch of the, you know, staff and stuff like that end up getting killed as well. But, you know, the main core of kids is still okay. And they're basically, like, once they start talking about what happened, and once Carlos like confronts, not so much confronts, but like asks Jaime, hey, what happened to this Santi kid? Because Jaime seems to be the only one that knows. He says, well, you know, me and Santi were down in the basement or like near the cistern or whatever. And we were kind of just down there farting around, like looking for slugs or whatever. And Jacinto comes down, and Jacinto was trying to like open the safe where he thought the gold was. And Jacinto saw them. So Jaime kind of got away, like, before Jacinto could get hold of him. So he starts, like, saying to Santi, he's like, don't you say anything about this, or I'm gonna, like, kill you or whatever. But then, like, he pushes the kid, and the kid, like, smacked his head on the wall, and he basically, like, killed the kid. He didn't die outright, but he was, like, laying there and wounded. And then he was like, well, fuck this. And then he, like, weighted the kid down and, like, threw him into the cistern, and then, like, his body was never found. So now that Carlos knows that this ghost, the one who sighs, is actually Santi, and that something happened to him, like he was murdered, and he actually, him whispering all the time, like, many of you will die, he was actually trying to warn them that Jacinto was going to blow the place up and was going to kill a bunch of the kids, and that did actually end up happening. So he is now, like, not really afraid of the ghost anymore, because he knows, hey, that was a kid, and he got murdered, and he was just trying to give us information. He wasn't trying to scare us. So at that point, he basically goes to Santi, like the ghost, and says, what do you want? And Santi says that he wants Jacinto, because Jacinto was the one who killed him. Now, it ends up that most of the, like, pretty much everyone in authority at the orphanage has, you know, been killed. So Jacinto is pretty much there with two of his accomplices, and the kids are there, and he just kind of, like, locks them in a, you know, in a thing, and a lot of them are still wounded, like, from the explosion, so he just, like, locks them up in there, and he's just like, well, we're gonna lock them up in there until we find the gold, and then we'll just burn the whole place down or blow it up or whatever, and fuck the kids, because they're orphans, and no one will care. So they do that, but the two guys that are his accomplices, they're kind of, like, sick of hanging around here, and they're like, look, there's probably no gold, it's like, we've been here forever looking for it, and it's like, just whatever. So they just take off with the fucking car. So then Jacinto's just left there by himself. Now, it turns out, though, that while all the kids are kind of locked in this storage room or whatever, they're all kind of getting together, and they've got all the piece together, like, all the story about Santi and what happened to him. And they said, look, Jacinto killed Santi, so he's just going to kill all of us, like, once he finds the gold. So we really need to, like, team up and, you know, get rid of this motherfucker. And that's essentially what they do. Like, all the kids kind of team up, and one of them is able to get out. They, you know, one of them lets the other one out, and they basically lure Jacinto down to where the cistern is, and, you know, they have, like, sharpened sticks and stuff like that, and they just basically attack him, and then they call Santi so Santi can come and, like, take him away. And it turns out, too, that Jacinto actually does find the gold. The gold was actually hidden in the older woman that runs the place. I think her name's Carmen. It was hidden in her hollow leg. She had, like, a fake leg, you know, like a prosthetic leg. The gold bars were hidden in there. So he actually ends up finding them, but right before, like, the kids attack him and give him to Santi, and Santi, like, drags him down into the cistern and, like, drowns him. And ironically, like, when he first falls into the cistern, it's the gold is, like, weighing him down so he can't get back up right away, and letting Santi, like, come down there and get him. So, as I said, I kind of feel like when people talk about Guillermo del Toro's movies, one, Kronos doesn't get brought up a lot, and like I said, I will eventually do a review of that too, because that's a really, really good movie also. But this one, I kind of feel like more people talk about, like, Pan's Labyrinth and the ones that came a little bit later, but this one, I mean, if you liked Pan's Labyrinth, this one is very, very similarly themed. It's set during the same time period, you know, it's set during the Spanish Civil War, and it very much, you know, it has a kid at the center of the action, and a kid who, you know, this one is a lot less fantasy-based. Like I said, it's more like a very, very sad ghost story, like a revenge sort of story, more than like a fantastical kind of thing, but the themes of it are very, very similar. And as I said, this is just, it's a beautiful, like, haunting, really, really sad movie, and it has, honestly, one of the best ghosts in any movie ever. I just love the look of that ghost. It's just so, so great, and it still holds up today, even though the movie's, like, 20 years old. The special effects on Santi, the ghost, like, just looks so, so cool, and it's just so creepy and just so haunting. There's just something really, really, I don't know, just the whole vibe of it is just really cool. And like I said, if you like other movies that, you know, this gets compared a lot, like I said, to The Others, which came out the same year. And, you know, like I said, later, The Orphanage, which Del Toro also produced, although he didn't direct it. That has, like, a similar kind of vibe. So if you like that kind of stuff, but you haven't seen this one, this is definitely one that you need to check out, because it's just a great, like, mixture of kind of this historical ghost story with, you know, a real heart to it. And it's just like, it's very, very sad. And it's just, oh man, it's like, it's really, really good. One of the best ghost stories ever made. Like I said, I love all Del Toro's stuff. And I feel like people don't talk about this one as much as they talk about Pan's Labyrinth. And I get that because Pan's Labyrinth is amazing. And that's another one I need to do one of these days. But I feel like this one gets overshadowed a little bit, and that's a shame. So if you haven't seen The Devil's Backbone, please check it out. I actually rented it on YouTube, but I think you can find it like pretty much any streaming service you would care to find it on. So please check it out. And if you've seen it, let me know what you think about it in the comments. And that will do it for this installment. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.